Welcome to our Lent reflections for this year at Guildford Cathedral. The reflections this year are taken from five of the chapters of the book The Grace-Filled Wilderness, which looks at some of the major conditions of modern life and considers how we might approach these as well as redeem them. These are experiences which all of us have and inhabit at some stage. They're both age old as well as contemporary, and are often double-edged. Experiences which bring us life as well as potentially draining us of it when we fall into them in the wrong way. Indeed, we might describe them as wilderness experiences. As we follow these through, I invite you to reflect on whether you think that faith enables us to inhabit them more bravely or helps shed light and meaning on them, often after a period of time has passed, or not. All of these concepts are things Jesus also experienced and thus connect with his own experience in the wilderness and journey to the cross. The book presents 6 weeks of daily Bible readings to run alongside these, and there are also some questions to think and reflect on both individually or in a group at the end of each session. The themes are these: how we deal with our appetites, what gives us identity, how we live with the freedom we hold, how we use our time in terms of occupation, how we deal and overcome with the underlying anxiety that we often live with, and how do we approach pain in its various forms. All of those experiences, conditions, concepts are the things which are explored. Every year, the season of Lent encourages us to reflect on our own fallible state as human people, our fragility, and the fact that we are reminded of our own need of God. Lent can be used to reflect on the difficult things in our lives, as well as life's problematic questions. But Lent is often more than this too. It can signify a state of existence or an entrenched mindset. Lent can happen at any time, in January or July, at Christmas or in the summer holidays. Lent is a spiritual state which can be a metaphor for those most harsh, most inexplicable times when we understand that life is tough through our living of it. We feel the deep pain of a situation, our own or another's, disappointment, we might feel trapped, or when a hunger is not satisfied by what we think will fill it. And all of this is symbolised biblically in the place of the desert or wilderness. But this must also not be understood as something entirely negative, but a place of discipline, development and honing. For Jesus, it was a place of encounter, a time when he came face to face with himself as a human being, and a place where he saw beyond his humanity to the reality of who God was and what was being asked of him. And our own lives are rarely made up of times when we feel on 100% undiluted high, or the opposite of 100% despair. Rather, life is made up of a duality which is connected, where both hope as well as pain are intertwined. In the wilderness, Satan as well as the angels were there. In the passion narrative, Jesus has friends betraying him as well as carrying his cross. Good Friday is followed by Easter Day. Our lives, as Jesus was, are a mixed bag. But the important thing in all of this is to remember that reality is reorganised around Jesus primarily through love. Love leads him from a place of emptiness into the sordidness and exuberance of human life. Jesus proved himself to be deeply attentive to his own inner processes, to his internal and external demons, who tried to mould him into a distorted human being to knock him off course. Jesus was also pulled and pushed by societal forces and by those who encountered him just as we are. But his time in the desert was a place where he refocused so that no other God was able to exert influence over the primary aim of his life, which was one of love and service to the world. This evening we will look at the first of these concepts, that of appetite. Basically, appetite is a positive experience. It reminds us that we're human and that our physical needs are reliant on others, important, and that many of the appetites we experience are about expressing a deep humanity, joy, and connection with others. For our purposes, I am talking about appetite in the light of food in a traditional sense, but I could have talked about it in the sense of a love of learning, for example. It's just an umbrella word which aims to connect the five parts of this chapter. First of all, we'll think about two of perhaps more negative or what might be understood as negative concepts, but they're not necessarily. So hunger and fasting. Well, we still live in a hungry world, which is still a scandal. There seems no end and seemingly no solution to this, in spite of the vast wealth and technology which the world still has. And yet hunger is biblical. Jesus is described as famished when he finally emerges from his wilderness experience. Food is not only physically vital, but it has emotional and spiritual implications too. Then as now, of comfort and reassurance, and perhaps particularly in the light of the present crisis. Jesus tells those fretting around the daughter of Jairus to give her something to eat. Physical food is also symbolic of the bigger picture of God, as Jesus invites his disciples to partake in something that is a symbol of him, his life of sacrifice and redemption, and inspires them to do the same. The story of the Israelites in the Sinai Desert in Exodus 16 feels epic in its proportion. The Israelites, if you remember, are scared, they've been brought out of Egypt and they're hungry. They're in the middle of nowhere and they're trusting Moses and Aaron to provide food for them. And so Moses and Aaron on their behalf pray and ask God for that, and God provides them with both meat and bread in the form of manna and quails. But interestingly, the text tells readers that although some gathered a little more and others a little less, everyone had as much as each of them needed. An interesting comment amidst a situation of crisis, that somehow God inspires these people to take what each family needs and no more. An ideal principle which, if applied particularly at the moment with what's happening in our supermarkets and globally, would have consequences. It would mean that everyone could have a fair distribution. Again, it's interesting because in that chapter we're told that some of the Israelites got a little bit greedy and they were tempted to store up enough food for tomorrow, a natural inclination perhaps. But what happens is that they discover that that food that they've stored up has actually gone mouldy, and really they should have offered that in thanksgiving for the giving of it to God on the Sabbath. And so the chapter ends with 2 litres of manna or bread being kept in a jar as a recognition and thanksgiving for all people, for all that God has provided for them. Hunger is also closely linked in the Christian tradition to the concept of fasting. Fasting has been a part of the Christian tradition, spiritual tradition, for centuries. Lent begins as we remember Jesus' own fast in the desert. Jesus refuses to turn three hard stony rocks into delicious yeasty loaves, not just through simple willpower, but through a spiritual discipline which could only have come from God. When Jesus said no to the power of evil, he was saying yes to living a disciplined physical life. A life which, when lived well and spirit-fueled, is transformed into a state of joyful enough. In our often satiated world, being physically hungry has become unknown territory on the whole. It seems for us a frightening thing to be hungry or to be faced, as some of us have been recently, with a lack of provisions. Faith, prayer and fasting formed both a temporary barricade as well as a personal and symbolic battle against cosmic evil for Jesus, and had eternal significance. It's interesting because normally fasting in our contemporary society is suddenly in. Remember Michael Mosley's fast diet a few years ago, which is still going, the idea that actually fasting can be built in to a regular practice. So not a diet as such, but just 2 days when you eat less. Fasting is more obvious in some other religious traditions, such as Islam, which has Ramadan, and in the Eastern Orthodox Christian tradition. So it might be a challenge to think whether fasting would be of some benefit to you. How would you implement it in a wise and healthy way? Prayer is often deeply connected with fasting, and there is a tradition that says that prayer becomes even more powerful when you fast alongside it. So let's move through our trajectory from wilderness to grace to explore two slightly more positive concepts in feast and excess. Feast is not so much an event as an attitude. And we could argue that we live or have lived in a state of perpetual feast. When I was growing up, things like eating cream cakes was definitely a special occasion. But now our lives are flooded with an exotic and mouth-watering variety of food, food programmes, food literature and advertising. A carnival of deliciousness that is designed to tantalise our taste buds and make celebrity chefs of us all. But thankfully, genuine feasts are still present in our lives. They symbolise celebration, joyfulness, anticipation and achievement. Feast lies within the coming together of people who love one another. They're often about gratitude and occasionally about reconciliation, as is demonstrated in the story of the wayward prodigal son. The return of he who was so lost, a family reunited and a transformed life are all here understood as an event which warrants a feast. Where the calf had been fattened and killed for a special occasion to create a banquet, which presumably the whole household is invited to. I like reflecting on films, and there's a wonderful scene in the film Paddington 2, where Paddington transforms the diet of the prison where he has been unjustly incarcerated. All the inmates eat are endless bowls of monotonous porridge. And Paddington has the temerity to suggest to the very scary chef, who's called Knuckles, that actually a marmalade sandwich might be a welcome relief. And so Knuckles says to Paddington that he has to make some marmalade, which Paddington does. And he absolutely transforms the prison cafe. And suddenly it unlocks all the recipes that the other inmates remember from their own past and their own childhood. And they end up creating a wonderful array of new recipes and create a retro and very colourful cafe. It's a wonderful scene if you haven't seen the film. And so the concept of feast then is a communal one. It's linked to the word for festival. I think it's quite difficult to have a feast alone and enjoy it. And anything can be a feast. It doesn't have to be an expensive or posh meal. Good bread and good cheese can be a feast as much as dinner in a posh restaurant. For Christians, feast is about a deep appreciation of the gift of food. That those who've produced what we eat, both near and far, are spiritually connected to us, and that we accept some responsibility for it. Feast is about approaching what we eat with a natural respect as well as delight. When Jesus inhabits spaces where food and drink is involved, he often uses his God-given powers to redirect the situation, moving it from anxiety to enjoyment. And so he changes water into wine at the wedding at Cana when those responsible are worried. He cooks his tired disciples a breakfast of grilled fish on the beach. The presence of Jesus creates feast, and it is something about locally sourced, lovingly prepared food set in an atmosphere where people are genuinely welcomed and strengthened, which potentially and mysteriously recreates this in any setting. Tertullian, the North African church father, pointed out that the Christian name for feast also explains the reason for it, agape in Greek, meaning love. Feast, as Jesus so clearly demonstrated, is about using good food on opportune occasions to cross those divides through the invitation of hospitality. How can we create feast in our own lives and maybe connect this with the idea of hospitality? So just a few thoughts now on excess. Excess, if ever there was one, is a really double-edged concept, isn't it? And in the Bible too, it is also very ambiguous. So much biblical imagery, particularly in the Old Testament, blooms to produce good things in abundance. Oil, figs, wheat, wine, all seen as gifts from God to his people. If you have a garden or an allotment and you grow vegetables, you'll know, or fruit, that you'll know that you always produce too much and that you have to give that away most of the time. The earth itself produces an excess. Biblically, excess is very double-edged. Positively prolific, and yet greed, drunkenness and the amassing of wealth is understood as an abuse of the divine gift. Remember the story in Luke 12 of the rich farmer who builds bigger and bigger barns to store his crops, and yet he dies so that he cannot enjoy all of that superfluity. But there was also great excess in the expensive fragrance and perfume that the unnamed woman poured all over Jesus in preparation for his death, for which he was recognised as performing a wonderful ritual of deep significance. In the feeding of the 5,000, 12 baskets of excess food was collected. But the margins are slim, as God provides, but not with a superabundance. So some scholars say that for a crowd which was so big, actually gathering 12 baskets was not that great. So as stewards of the earth, we need to be careful in our production as well as in our consumption of food and goods. Excess in terms of waste has always been considered detrimental in many cultures and faiths. Recently, in our overflowing world of too much, we are getting better at approaching excess, and with this, waste more creatively. So big drive against plastic. And many of you may have heard of the Junk Food Cafe initiative started by Adam Smith, a really fantastic global initiative which aims at gathering the excess food from food shops and restaurants and cafes, and then building that and creating new food to offer out to the community, those who are hungry and those who aren't, but just who want to come along. And that is paid for with whatever you are able to give, or whatever you think that food is worth. A really fantastic concept if you come across that. So feast and excess. And finally, we move on to our final idea, which is perhaps a more overtly religious one. It's called bread for the world, and links with the sharing of bread and wine. And I want to start with a quote from someone called Ryan Cook, who had the most tremendous ministry of opening his own front door regularly to invite those he had met in the week, not just people he knew, but friends and strangers, to come and share a meal, and just to experiment in terms of what that meant in terms of creating community. And this is what he says. It's a really powerful quote. "I've learnt that the table is a powerful symbol of a world put right. At the table, you look people in the eyes. The surface of the table is level. It's a levelling act. It creates an environment where you reach your hands into the same pot, take from the same food, to sustain your lives in the same way. You have come in need of the same thing, and you get that need met by performing the same actions at the same time." One of the really powerful things about my own calling to an ordained vocation was watching a hugely diverse church come and stand or kneel together in front of the altar rail. All of those people, whoever they were, whatever their background, colour of their skin, culture, age, bank balance, were made equal and given dignity at that moment when they received bread and wine. For me, it became an incredibly powerful symbol and a ministry that I wanted to deeply participate in. It starts at the Last Supper, which was no idealised meal, for here were gathered the weak who could have been strong, the traitors who should have been faithful friends, the self-righteous who should have been humble, the dense who should by this time have understood the implications of what was going on. But at that table took no prisoners, as it provided an opportunity where all of the joy and the pain, the best and the worst of human life was exposed. It is ultimately, or was ultimately, a sacramental and unifying place for all human failure, ensuring still that this notorious band of Christ's followers were given the opportunity to witness to the deep symbolism through food of Jesus's message to them, and thus to the world. The table, the food, and even the company are the ingredients which make this event, as potentially every meal which is shared, an unconventional means of grace. And so this table is a place where the most radical and momentous sign of God's inclusive love and the gospel of grace is played out. The table, the altar of our every Sunday, is a symbol of what followers of Christ are challenged to think about putting in place in their own lives. The table is a place where those who know each other and those who do not yet feel included can come and gather. The table is where they can witness the mystery of something momentous, that God, yearns for all people to be fed physically through good food, as well as through inclusive companionship, and thus to be sustained and encouraged emotionally and spiritually. And so we will leave our reflections on appetite here at the Last Supper, at this place of immense and radical possibility. It's a microcosm of the potential the story of Jesus can have on an often undernourished wilderness world, for it provides a seedbed for the challenge Jesus makes through the physical stuff of his own body and his own blood. This meal perpetuates the story of God through one human being's sacrifice, love and new life. The table, as Ryan Cook says, is about the table being a place where friends and strangers dream dreams of changing the world, dreams both tiny and ambitious. Opening the table is something we can all do, not an elite ministry for those in the know, inclusive hospitality, giving body and blood, food and drink, welcome and community actually to anybody and to all. This is Jesus' charge to his disciples, and it is ours too. The Last Supper is a place where Jesus creates bread, bread in its widest and most mystical of understandings, bread for absolutely everyone, grace for absolutely everyone. Bread for the world is available here. Food can be a means to formulate new futures for ourselves as well as for others. And if you want some further questions to think about this week, here they are: prayer and action. What are your particular appetites? Have you got a healthy attitude to these? If not, what do you need to do? Can you remember a time when you were seriously hungry or worried about the provision of food? This Lent, how could you positively use your own hunger to alleviate someone else's? Can you commit to fasting and praying for a community that is suffering from global or local famine, or simply for those with not enough to eat in your own community? Perhaps you could consider giving up one meal each week, or going without snacks during Lent. And particularly at this time of corona crisis, please do support your local food banks. Is it appropriate to give up a luxury appetite this Lent and redirect the time, energy and money you might have spent on this to a project that works to alleviate hunger of some kind? Reflect on the excess in your life. How might you use this in new ways for the good of others and the glory of God? How might you cut down on your own food waste or other things that are discarded? How might your church community rise to this challenge? Is there a real junk food cafe project or similar near you that you could get involved with? Could you organise a fashion show with secondhand clothes to raise money for a charity? How does the concept of feast express itself in your life, in the life of your church? Could you introduce something new in terms of a special meal to celebrate or draw others together in the future? Could you have a monthly feast event, even if this is really simple? How do you, or could you, provide bread for the world? Remembering that this doesn't have to be complicated. How could you take the essence of Ryan Cook's open invitation into your church community in some way? What food event could become a tool for mission for you individually as well as communally? How do you understand and respond to the idea of the table being a levelling place?